Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of May, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. One of the things we've always liked about Google is that when you sign up for a free email account, you get 15 gigs of free storage, three times what most others give you. That may be coming to an end. Sort of.
Yeah.
We're hearing reports that anyone signing up for a new Google account must now, actually, I have to say, last night, long after I wrote my news, I saw a press release from Google, and what they say is they're testing this out in a couple of areas and may or may not bring it to the rest of the world. So I'll just go on with it.
Well, who doesn't already have a Google account, too?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, really.
We're hearing reports that anyone signing up for a new Google account must now provide a phone number during registration to get 15 gig of free online storage. Anyone who doesn't provide a phone number will only receive 5 gigabytes of free online storage. This seems to be only affecting new users, not existing users. So if you've already got a Google account, calm down. Why does Google need a phone number? It's for verification of new accounts. Once verified, you're no longer considered an anonymous user, and thus you're graciously allowed to have 15 gigabytes of storage. This also has the added benefit, from Google's perspective, of preventing you from signing up for multiple accounts and getting lots of free storage. But it really kind of doesn't, because I just did that again last night, used my same phone number just to try it, and got it. This phone number verification can be completed at a later time. That means you can sign up without a phone number, then add it to your account later to bump up your cloud storage capacity from 5 gig to 15 gig. If you want more cloud storage on your Google account but absolutely don't want to give away your phone number, you can pay for a Google One plan. Google hasn't officially issued a statement or announcement about this change. Actually, like I said, they did late last night. And their support page says your Google account comes with up to 15 gigabytes of storage at no charge.
Those weaselly words.
That page previously said your Google account comes with 15 gigabytes of cloud storage at no charge and was stealthily changed at some point recently. I signed up for a new Gmail account yesterday and I couldn't sign up without a phone number for verification that I'm not a bot, which is what happens on the web. But if you do it on your phone, apparently you can sign up without a phone number. But you're on your phone already. Okay, anyway. It seems the only way you can skip adding the phone number is by telling it you're under 15 or signing up with a mobile app. But that gives them access to the phone number you're setting up on it anyway. Most of the reports are currently coming from overseas, which jibes with what some people have said. It's mostly happening in Africa and a little bit in India right now. So we may not see it here for a while. In any case, if you're looking to get more online storage for free, sign up for those extra Gmail accounts today. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google quietly cuts free storage to 5 gigabytes? And your choices are, it's an outrage, I'll grab a couple of extra accounts, not a big deal, and gee, what now? So far, we've got 26 votes, and gee, what now is just ahead of not a big deal. And a number of you are grabbing extra accounts, and only a few of you are outraged. But however you feel about it, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. How long have I been doing this? To soundbites.org.
2 years.
Yeah, just a couple of days. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and you can vote in the poll. And, of course, then you can give us a call about that or any other subject at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
And reports came out a couple of days ago that multiple data centers in the Middle East have been bombed in multiple different countries.
Right.
So Maybe that's why Google's doing it. Suddenly they're losing their storage.
Well, that's certainly a part of it, although they're supposed to be building one where? In Arizona, I think it is?
Yeah.
Bigger than Manhattan Island, they're saying. The problem is there's no water in Arizona. I've been to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any water.
Yeah, my wife's from there.
You can't build new stuff in Arizona without securing the water rights. So how the hell are they building 400,000 acres? 400,000 acres of data center, which uses massive amounts of water, with no water.
But wait a minute.
Or are they stealing it from the people?
Wait a minute. Where is it? Now, Arizona is hot, yes. But that's the southern part. If you go on up into the mountains up north, that's a lot cooler. Now, if they're going up there, that could mean the big difference.
Yeah,
up to the mountain range.
I don't think
range.
They are. I don't think they're going north. I think they're out in the desert.
I've found a list. I don't know these cities. There's one in Eloy. There's one in Buckeye. Several in Mesa. Several in Glendale.
Most of those are south.
And then Phoenix.
Isn't Phoenix the
hottest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, actually, Tucson is
Tucson,
hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're so close.
Yeah.
I mean, and right now, I mean...
Well, an hour's drive in Arizona is like next door. So, yeah they're close.
And, I mean, right now, they've been suffering with 80 and 90 degree temperatures just through spring. You know?
Yep.
Not even into the summer yet. And already they're... had a record-breaking winter as far as temperature-wise.
Right. And, of course, all of that leads to the higher RAM and GPU prices that are hitting us.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that they're building all of these data centers and creating all of this capacity, and it's about 90% unpromised for. So, in other words, they're building all this stuff and hope if they build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have commitments yet. Uncommitted. That's
yeah.
TSMC just got, TSMC Arizona just got a $2 billion cash influx from TSMC Taiwan, parent company, on their Arizona manufacturing center for chip manufacturing. And so I'm looking at it on Google Maps. They have the solar array is bigger than the manufacturing building. What must be the air conditioning unit, because there's like 50 giant fans, is monstrous. And these little tiny cars.
Yep.
Just looking how big it is, yeah.
Right, and if you look at that stuff on Google Earth, you'll see that, A, there's a whole lot of empty space in Arizona. So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well,
the problem is... all of that empty space is hot. And if you don't have the water to cool off the data center, putting a data center in there is a... I've been in a data center where the air conditioning died. It is not pretty. Yeah.
But if they can build a huge... I mean, if most of the area is being used for solar, you know, and then to run air conditioners and that type of stuff...
That'll help.
Yeah, that'll greatly. Help. Well, that's what they got in their advantage is because of the heat and the sun. I mean, they could build, you know, mega...
Maybe they're power generating, yes.
Yeah, solar.
Yeah.
And the new solar panels that are coming out are 26% efficient, which is three times what they used to be.
And I just read about a promising breakthrough that's going to bring it up to 60%.
Yeah, I've heard that. But I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seriously... the logistics are pretty screwed up at this point.
I've been seeing ads for solar panels that if your electric bill is more than $100, you can get free solar panel installation and free solar panels. And, you know, well, that's too good to be true. Something was the catch.
Free.
Yeah. Well, my son has been contacted by them, and he's working through and trying to find all the catch. The biggest catch is it's a 25-year repayment plan.
Yeah, so
but the
how
state,
is it free?
Well, the state is doing like 90% of the funding. Mm-hmm. So you get off the grid, and so your current electric bill goes down, but you're paying that towards solar, so you're not paying any more, and you're probably paying less.
Oh, so it's free in the sense that you're not paying additionally.
Yeah. And they're already talking about raising the rates.
As long as those plans still exist.
RG&E is going to be raising the rates again this summer.
Well, my wife has already told me we are driving your hybrid everywhere.
Yep.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
That's the sad thing right now that, you know, that they're not doing more hybrid, you know, electric cars. I mean, that's the way to go right now with the gas price.
The lobbying is all in big oil.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, they're pushing big oil. The drill, baby, drill, right? But the reality is that the average consumer can't afford it.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. I wish it weren't true.
Yeah.
I loved paying 25 cents a gallon for gas, but I'm old.
Same here. I can remember filling up my VW. It took all of $2.25 to fill the tank up for the week.
You got to add that to your shirt. You were there when in the beginning. Cursive writing, 25 cents a gallon, stick shift.
Stick shift. I did
analog clocks.
Rotary dialed phones.
Yep.
I had a watch that you could power by shaking your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Or better yet.
Just don't do that in front of people.
Operators on the phone.
Operators on the phone.
Party lines.
Mabel, get me. Yep. Well, I knew somebody who had a 3-digit phone number when they were a kid. You know, Maple 567 or whatever it was. Yeah.
Well, I've got a sign from a fence company because my neighbor was redoing their fence, and the old sign was there because the houses I live in were built in 1928, and it's got the old-fashioned phone number. I'll have to bring that in and just show you.
Somewhere amongst my stuff, I have a coupon for a 10-cent McDonald's burger, reduced from 15 cents.
Is there an expiration date on it? You should try taking it in now.
From the RTS buses?
Yeah.
I still have the original transfer coin.
Oh, yeah.
To get on to the RTS bus for a trip.
When I lived in New York City, we had we were all out of work actors, so we all had second jobs. One guy worked for the Transit Authority. He came home one day and he said, "Guys, they're doubling the rate of subway tokens from 25 cents to 50 cents, but they're not changing the tokens."
Whose bright idea was that?
We pooled all our money.
Yep.
Bought hundreds of dollars worth of tokens. Sold them for 35 cents.
Bingo.
Yep.
We paid rent. We ate like kings. For out of work actors to actually have money in their pocket.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Entrepreneurs.
Heck yeah.
That's a lot. So I remember those days. Those were the days. But I also remember being incensed when gas went up to a quarter a gallon, 25 cents a gallon. Mm-hmm. I said, if it goes any higher, I'll stop driving. Apparently, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
All right. We should get to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm getting in early today.
You are that.
Two questions, and I'll just listen to the answers. First, is there any truth to rumors that Raspberry Pi 5s and ahead may be doubling in price? And then second, from you guys' perspective as computer experts, what effect might President Trump's deals, whatever they are, with China have an effect on the price of solid-state drives? And I'll just be happy to listen.
Okay, so let's start with Raspberry Pi. It is definitely has gone up considerably.
Mm-hmm. $45.
$45, and they were originally only $90. So it's pretty much it's getting on its way to doubling. There's no question of that.
It's easy to double when you're that low.
Well, exactly right. Yeah. And that's entirely due to the chip shortage issues. And that's not gonna that's not going to be alleviated anytime soon because, like we said at the beginning, when they can charge you, call it $3 a meg, and they can charge an AI data center $15 a meg for the same chip, where do you think they're going to sell it?
And they don't actually pay any physical money anyway. It's like, we'll pay $15 a chip for the chip, and you pay $15 for the video card we're going to make. And so nobody actually passes any money.
Right.
Yeah.
But the accountants...
It's a wash.
Yeah.
Right. But the data centers, like we said, are buying this stuff up left and right, and they don't even have any commitments to use it.
Mm-hmm.
They're you know, it's gambling. It's like
futury.
It's like rolling the dice. You're betting on the come. Is it going to happen or not? And so that's where the money's going, and that's why things like the Raspberry Pi are getting much more expensive. The reality is that pretty much last May or April. A year ago was about the time to buy. Prices are just going to go up for a while, so you might as well buy now. Waiting is not going to be good. As far as the deals from China, I didn't see any deals come out of Trump's list.
Nothing.
Trip to China. So I'm not sure that anything's going to change there at all.
President Xi insulting Trump.
Considerably, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is that what we're going to see... So there's an issue. The second issue we have with China is that we have caught them in the past putting malware in some of their devices, spyware, in some of their devices. So we have banned a lot of their devices. The problem is everything we use electronically is made in China or Japan or Korea or Vietnam or somewhere
Taiwan.
Over there. But most of it is made with people who were trained in China. So, you know, what do we do at this point? President Trump has talked about the incentives he wants to put in place, which he hasn't done yet, but wants to put in place to build all those fabs in America. They take 5 years to build. You don't snap your fingers and have a brand new chip fab suddenly appear fabricator. Suddenly appear somewhere. It takes 5 years to build. So what do we do for those 5 years?
And a lot of people were questioning why he took business leaders with him instead of diplomats.
Yeah, well, that's a separate issue. We don't do it that here.
Yeah.
The fact is that in terms of technology, we're pretty much stuck with a couple of companies outside of China, but even they were trained by the Chinese. So where are we with all of those deals? We're pretty much nowhere. We're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and that's not good for us. But there's no immediate relief in sight because it's a minimum of unless look, if you want to build a decent fab, right? You could probably build a crappy fab in 3 years.
And the problem
you don't want any of the product that comes out of that fab.
And by the time you finish building it, the processes have all changed, so that fab isn't worth much anymore.
Right.
Yeah, it's got to have way futuristic implications built into it.
Right.
As it's going on, and like Steve just said, it'll still be behind the times.
Right. So right now, we do not see prices for RAM or solid state drives going down anytime soon.
And they're making them so much cheaper. And the electronics nowadays, the TVs and everything else, you know, granted, they're made over in Taiwan and Japan and that, but they're kick butt. I mean, the quality and everything else on them, and we can't make them for that price here because of our labor.
We can't make them for that price at that quality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, it's all the generations of kids. You know, my generation grew up saying, go to college, get a job so you don't have to work in a crappy factory.
Right.
And now we don't have any factories and nothing is made here.
Well, and when I was a kid, the joke was a Japanese transistor radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was junk.
Cheap. Yep. Yeah.
It was cheap junk. Nowadays, you get something made in Japan, you think, oh, excellent.
Yeah.
So we're you know, factories are being built. You know, a lot of things are being made in America now, but... This, we built up a global supply chain for the last 50 years.
Right. That's the other side of it. We can build it here. Where do the raw materials come from?
Yep.
Most of them, most of the rare earth elements do not come from America.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can mine, there may be 6 tons of iridium somewhere in Arizona. Okay. Fabs across the world use 6 tons a day. Who cares about 6 tons?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of problem. It's a much bigger problem with a much wider scope than we think, and I don't see it, any relief in the near future.
Nope.
That's just what I see.
Well, thank you guys for being depressively accurate and honest.
Yeah. Thank you.
You may not like the answer, but we haven't lied to you.
Until the AI bubble crashes and people stop buying AI stuff.
Well, and that's just it. You know, it is a bubble.
Yeah.
And the question is, how long is that bubble and can we outlast it? I have for decades bought refurbed and used systems from Woot and Amazon and places like that and been very, very happy.
Yeah.
Now, that's pretty much what I can afford.
Well, when the cryptocurrency craze started, mm-hmm. you suddenly couldn't get video cards because they were all being run for crypto. And then, you know, crypto markets have kind of crashed. And now those super high-end video cards are coming back on the used markets really cheap.
Really cheap. But so they're all being bought up by
the AI companies now. Yeah. So for there was a brief window there where you could get a good video card cheap.
Yep. I bought the last new computer I bought was last January because I knew this was coming. And I bought an i9 processor with a Radeon 6600 in it. End of year model. The new models were out, so this model was at a 35% discount. I jumped on it. But you know, the reality is that that's where you got to go now. You got to get those deals that way because they're fewer and farther between now because of the chip shortages. Everybody knows what they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I brought in that 2-in-1.
It's a little laptop.
You can pull the monitor off and it's a tablet. And it came with 4 gig of RAM and 64 gig of hard drive space. That's all it had in it. But it was also only $69.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Refurbished with Windows 11 on it. Now, it is the slowest machine I have ever used, and I used an Osborne 1.
Yeah.
But it works, and it was $69, and I thought, for $69, I got to try it.
Well, you're not a gamer.
Right.
So if you throw some books on there and you're reading.
Right. For the stuff I do, you know, that sits next to a chair when I, you know, the very few times I actually watch television. I can sit there and look stuff up on IMDb or whatever I want to do on
that. If you know what you want to use it for.
Exactly.
We run into problems all the time where someone buys too little computer, usually because they didn't tell us what they were going to use it for. Oh, yeah, I just want to use word processing a little bit, you know, surf the web a little bit. And then they come back and say, this computer won't play my game. No, it won't.
Yeah.
You didn't say anything about a game.
Yeah. We knew it wouldn't play your game when we sold it to you.
Yeah, if you'd have mentioned your game, we would have not sold you that model.
That's exactly right.
You got to get it for what you're going to use it for now and possibly something even more intense down the road because games and everything else are always looking to improve the features within that piece of software.
Right. And Apple's been having a hard time keeping up with the Mac Mini and Mac Studio. Even the iMacs are short because everyone is buying, especially the Mac Mini. The $499 Mac Mini made a great little AI server.
Exactly right.
For local models. So it's very hard to get them.
People are snapping those up.
Yep, and it may be several more months before the products come back.
Right. For the same reason, it's all about AI. And people want to run local AI models. LLMs, local language model. LLM.
Local large language models.
Right, exactly. So, and I, you know, I'm doing that on an older machine, an i7, I think it is. And it's kind of slow. A Mac would be faster because of the, chip that's in it. The M
series, Apple Silicon.
Series, whichever number it is at this point. So it's faster, but, you know, I can still run them. I just have to wait a little longer. But, you know, people want, you know, instant gratification isn't fast enough anymore. And so, we have that issue of some pretty serious, costs coming our way. And I don't see it going lower anytime soon. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Will from Hampton, Virginia on the line. What's up, Will? How's it in Hampton these days?
It's getting a little toasty, but other than that, it's okay.
It's the enthusiasm I particularly appreciate.
Yeah, definitely. Two things. I had the fortunate or unfortunate experience of having to explain sound bites to my kid brother. And at the conclusion of that explanation, he said, "Oh, it's like the computer version of Tommy and Ray."
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that. Boy, will I take that. That is high praise indeed.
That's a compliment, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I didn't get in any trouble with you guys.
That's high praise indeed. Yeah. Anybody who compares us to Tom and Ray Meliazzi, the Car Talk guys, that is high praise indeed.
Click and clack.
The Tappet Brothers.
Yeah, definitely. This is kind of like a follow-on to what you guys have been discussing. I was looking at Wired, the latest edition of Wired.com, an article entitled, "After Struggling with EVs, U.S. Automakers Pivot to Energy. Ford and GM are backing away from electric vehicles and moving into the battery storage business, and it all comes back to AI." And one of the reasons this got my attention is because I know that in the South and the West that data centers have had aspirations to expand because supposedly there's energy and land resources. But obviously from you guys' discussion today, that's not necessarily the case. In fact, I guess they run up against a lot of NIMBY litigation.
Not in my backyard. Yeah, exactly. The energy is there. I mean, obviously, there's just sunlight pouring down on the desert all day long. So the energy is there. The problem is at the other end, cooling down the data centers. Because when it is, you know, and in Arizona, it gets into 108, 109, 110 Fahrenheit. An air conditioner ain't going to cut it. You need water cooling, and they don't have water. But yeah, in terms of the energy, you build that solar array, and the sun just gives it to you.
Well, what happens when it's not sunny? That's what the batteries are for.
Yeah. In fact, Ford Motor Company, they recently had a bump in their stock because what they have done is they have created a wholly owned subsidiary called Ford Energy, which would make industrial scale batteries for, I guess, like a UPS setup for the data centers. That's
right.
What caught my attention.
Yep, and Ford is not the only person doing that, a company doing that. The thing is that you're right. EVs use batteries, and that means that there are people at the EV plants, design plants, who have great expertise in building batteries that are very efficient. And they're taking that expertise and changing it over to building data center batteries for storing solar energy. And that's also going to have now an effect on the EV market, which means because there are going to be fewer batteries being made for EVs as those companies change their fabricating plants over to building the giant batteries needed for solar systems for data centers. So yeah, the AI data center thing is just a monster that's eating everything.
Data centers are using an estimated 175 zettabytes of storage.
Yeah.
And we don't even know what a zettabyte is.
Yeah.
No.
It's like three generations beyond a terabyte.
Right. There's terabyte, there's petabyte, there's zottabytes, there's yottabytes.
Onabytes, I think.
Onabytes,
and then
zettabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's going to get way worse before it gets better. And the people who are going to be impacted the most, I'm trying to put this politely because I'm on the air. So the people who will be impacted the most are us at the lower end. We're going to find it very difficult to buy computers that don't cost huge amounts of money, EVs that don't cost huge amounts of money.
And everything has chips in it these days.
Everything has chips and everything has batteries. And when all of that production is going to AI data centers, that leaves less for us. Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys get a chance, shoot on over to Wired.com. It's like about a 5-minute read, and it talks about, you know, how the different automakers are getting involved with the energy production piece.
Yep. And it makes sense, you know, from their point of view. Their job is to make money for their stockholders, shareholders.
What it's all about.
That's that is their due diligence, and they should do that. That is their job. But what that means is they do what's best for the shareholders, which means what's best for the company and not what's best for us. And so we're the ones that, you know, we're at the bottom of the hill, and we know what rolls downhill.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Will, for depressing us even more. We appreciate that.
All right, then. You guys have a good day.
We'll do our best. You too. Thanks.
Keep promoting us.
That's right. Tell Absolutely. Everybody down there. We expect all of Hampton, VA to be listening
Absolutely.
Next week.
You bet.
Thanks.
You bet.
Thanks, Will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hate to harp on it. I hate to make it sound like we're depressed, but the reality is that the best time to buy a new computer or a new solid-state drive was about
year.
6 months ago. Yeah,
last year.
Last year, actually, about a year ago. And the second best time is right now.
I had a 2-terabyte SSD in my Amazon cart just waiting for the price to drop below $100. It's $400 today.
Yes. Yep.
I should have bought it at 109. No, I'll wait another couple of weeks. It'll go down again.
Yeah, no.
No.
Not for years now.
That's why I'm glad I got my two extra Raspberry Pi 4s.
Yep.
They're just sitting there, and I'm waiting. They're just backups, and that's fine.
Yep.
I won't pay the price that they are right now.
I've got a 5 sitting on the shelf. Right now,
grab a 5. I wish I had, but I've got two, 8 giggers for the 4s, and because that's what I currently have for two of my 4 servers.
Yep,
that I'm using.
Yep. So, for a server, you don't need more than a 3.
That's what my other two are.
4 gig, maybe even 2 gig.
Well, I'm using the threes because I happen to have them, and they're running spinning drives.
Yes, all because you don't need more than that.
They both have terabyte spinning drives, and they just sit down in the basement where it's cool, and they just do their thing. Because each night, I've got my machine and my wife's machine being backed up to them.
You don't need more.
From there, they go up. My Money Dance goes up to the cloud.
Yep.
Photos are already up there, so those are the two key things that I worry about.
I've said before, years ago, a guy gave me a TiVo because he couldn't pay me for some work I did. So he gave me a brand new unused TiVo. I never used it. I was going to throw it away. I thought, what the hell? I might as well see what drive is it. It's probably 60-gig drive. Yeah. I can use that. 3 terabytes.
Whoa!
3 terabyte spinning drive.
Hello.
I've got an enclosure for it. I can't find the power supply.
Ugh.
So I'm slowly going through boxes and boxes. And, I've got Centronics cable if you need that. I can't find the power supply for this enclosure in order to put that up. What the heck? Dave, mute your phone, man. Dave's phone is
Walgreens.
Your
prescription's ready.
No, what they're pushing now is everybody should get their COVID, anybody over 55, the second COVID shot. I asked my doctor, he says, unless you really want shots, no. Once a year is good.
Once a year should be good. Well, there's a new strain and there's a new version.
If you deal with the public.
It's no different than the flu.
Yep.
Yeah. So
there's always going to be a different version each year.
Yeah. Yep. So, so now I'm just looking for that enclosure, and then I'll have another backup. But yeah, the fact is, I know a lot of people who are buying used laptops at garage sales, on Woot, on Amazon, strictly for the RAM. In some cases, because laptop RAM isn't necessarily very good. But for the hard drives, even a 60 gig drive is a good, you put enough of them together, you got a decent storage array for yourself. So we see people doing that stuff all the time. Oh. All right, I'm going to read some more news.
That was weird, though. On my phone, though, what bothers me is because I have the Do Not Disturb feature turned on for sound bites while I'm on air.
Is Walmart's one of your favorites? Because if your favorites will override.
Yeah.
There you go. You're welcome. And you too can get answers quickly if you give us a call at 585.
On my iPhone, it's only VIPs override Do Not Disturb, not every favorite.
Well, I only have 3 favorites. My wife, my daughter, and my sister-in-law.
Well, it's in my contacts. I don't know if it's favorites.
Yeah, if it's a favorite, it'll override.
I'll definitely change that one.
In your contacts, yeah.
All right, let me read some Microsoft news. Microsoft is currently testing a new speed boost feature in Windows 11 that is designed to improve app launch times and make things like the Smart Menu feel more responsive. You know, what Mac and Linux have been doing for decades. The feature, which is reportedly called Low Latency Profile, will ramp up CPU frequency in short bursts to improve the speed of menus, flyouts, apps, and more, much like how Mac OS handles similar tasks. Windows 11 testers have been trying out the new unannounced feature over the past week and noticed significant speed improvements, including launching File Explorer, the Start menu, as well as apps like Outlook, the Microsoft Store, and Paint, because, Paint doesn't launch fast enough.
Oh.
In an utterly shocking and totally unexpected turn of events, Microsoft's latest Patch Tuesday update for Windows 11 is causing trouble for some users. I hope you were sitting down.
Surprise, surprise.
The update, released on May 13th, is reportedly failing to install on certain computers, while a smaller group of users reports that the patch also slows internet access and performance after installation. The report started appearing shortly after the update rolled out through Windows Update. The majority of complaints are coming from users where affected systems repeatedly attempt to install, then roll back to the previous version. At least they roll back. But then they try to install, and then they roll back. So, you have a perpetual motion machine now. The issue appears tied specifically to Windows 11 systems running the May 2026 cumulative update. For some users, the installation never finishes successfully. Instead, the operating system throws an error message saying something didn't go as planned. No need to worry. Undoing changes, which it then tries to redo and has to undo again. Lather, rinse, repeat. Speaking of Patch Tuesday, soon after Microsoft released that May security update with no 0 days listed, an anonymous security researcher published proof of concept details for two unpatched Windows vulnerabilities. The bugs, dubbed Yellow Key and Green Plasma, could allow attackers to bypass BitLocker protections under specific recovery conditions or escalate local privileges to system-level access. The risks are different, but both point to the same problem for Windows users and IT teams. Even a clean Patch Tuesday doesn't mean every serious bug has been closed, or indeed, any serious bug. Another newly discovered vulnerability in the Microsoft Windows DNS client could let attackers silently execute malicious code across enterprise networks, exposing a massive attack surface. This critical security flaw carries a severe CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10. 9.8 out of 10. 9.8 out of 10. That's gold medal territory.
Mm-hmm.
By simply returning a maliciously crafted response to a routine network query, cyber criminals can seize control of vulnerable endpoints without requiring user interaction or prior authentication. While Microsoft currently assesses actual exploitation as unlikely, the sheer volume of affected machines makes this a high-priority risk for security teams worldwide. Sometimes I think unlikely to Microsoft simply means we haven't fixed it yet. Do you know what is likely? Getting an answer, and sometimes a correct answer, when you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
No pressure on us.
No pressure on us. We never say we give out correct answers, just answers. Sometimes, you know.
Sometimes we do get lucky.
We get lucky. And it's better to be lucky than good. But it's not bad to be good. So, yeah. So, look. We've said this many times. Part of Microsoft's problem with Patch Tuesday is the fact that every system out there is unique, and there are millions and millions and millions of them. And every one of them is unique, and I mean that sincerely.
Yeah.
But the other problem is that they fired most of their quality assurance people. Most of their QA department these days is being done by AI, and it's just not good. And I get it. Again, we're talking about fiscal responsibility. Their job is to make money for the shareholders, and you're not important to that. So I get why they did it. It just isn't good for us.
Well, if you love the smell of burning ammonium perchlorate.
Ooh, and who doesn't?
And who doesn't? These next 2 weekends are for you. This weekend in Potter, New York, is their annual Muckfest.
Ooh, baby.
Except this year they're doing a special commemorative. The founding member of the Upstate Research Racketry Group, ERG, passed. And so they're doing a tribute to him. And if you had any of your rockets were certified by Dutch, they want you to come and pay tribute to him. So that's this weekend, today and tomorrow in Potter. Next weekend, Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, in Geneseo is the National Sport Launch, East Coast Division. So we usually get a couple hundred flyers, at a regular launch, but, during NSL, we might get 1,000. So, 1,000 launches. So the last time we hosted ESL, we had 1,000 launches over the weekend.
Nice.
And, you know, hand out to all of the people running it, you know, trying to manage 1,000 launches.
Yeah, it sounds like not that much. I mean, you break down the number of hours in a day and the number of days in a weekend by 1,000, it seems pretty low. But there's a whole lot more to it than just 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah. There's, you know, four different flight lines depending on what size mortar you're using. We usually have a left, right, and center launch area, so you know the left side can be loading while the right side is launching, and
it's still a timing issue
and security and safety of the people
safety
on the line.
The biggest. Yeah.
because you have to go get those rockets when they land.
Yep. Free parking, free spectators, food trucks are going to be there. Free build, launch, and take home with you rockets for kids.
Nice.
Thanks to the Syracuse Rocket Society for that.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
Apparently, Buffalo and Syracuse rocket clubs have kind of faltered because they all launch it at Geneseo and Potter now in New York. We have two clubs in this area is very unusual for the hobby.
Well, the Rochester.
Well, we're losing space. So Geneseo, we have an 8,000-foot limit. In Potter, it's an 18,000-foot limit because that's more the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So much development is coming up. Houses are being built everywhere. A lot of rocket clubs and airplane clubs are losing their space because you need to have as much horizontal space as you do vertical space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because, wow. Yeah, you know, your rocket goes up 8,000 feet, it might land
8,000 feet away. Yeah. More, yeah. Yeah. Depending on the winds. Yeah.
In fact, we one guy landed a rocket on the roof of the Livingston County Jail, which is a mile and a half away from our field.
I'm sure that didn't cause any issues.
The parachute covered a camera, and he goes, "Oh my God!" So he races to the jail to see if he can figure out how to get his rocket back. While he's gone, a deputy comes up with a rocket. "This belonged to one of you guys?" And he stayed there and, you know, watched for a while and said, please don't do that again. Covering the camera was really bad.
Yeah, that would be the bad part.
But I've got a great picture of it because I've got a huge zoom on my camera.
So what you're telling me is when I was a kid and I used to take my homemade rockets to the mattress factory around the corner.
A's and B's and C's.
And C's and a couple of D's.
Couple of D's, not, yeah.
Which was directly in the landing path for the airport.
That's probably bad.
Wasn't a good idea.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying? Huh.
Well, most of the time,
we used to stop when they went over.
Yeah, if you stay below 400 feet, you're sort of okay. But closer to the airport, it's 100 feet.
We were close to the airport. We were so close to the airport that my next door neighbor, at one point, had his chimney knocked off his house by the landing gear of an airplane, which was coming in, admittedly, way too low.
Yeah, like that plane that hit the truck the other day.
Yeah.
Driving on the Jersey Turnpike.
The scariest airport to go into is definitely San Diego.
San Diego's bad.
Well, and they built a hotel at the end of the runway.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah. You're coming across, and then all of a sudden he does a 45-degree downward dip to get over that hotel down, and then boom, he's landing. My late wife, I thought I was going to owe the airlines a new set of armrests.
Yeah.
She dug into those so bad that she actually ripped the material.
That's funny.
Oh, scared the ever living out of her.
Yeah, I bet.
I had used to it because I had flown in there before, but she hadn't, and it was a whew, boom.
We had that. I took a trip one time, and I don't know who the pilot was, but I think he just finished watching Top Gun because he took off straight up and landed straight down. Just
A lot of that is because of the housing complexes that build up near the airport, and then people complain about the airplane noise.
Yeah, you're right.
So you either have to do a very steep takeoff, or you do a low power takeoff.
Right.
When you want all the power you can get to get in the air.
Right.
To keep back on the noise.
Yeah. Well, we had that same time that it knocked the neighbor's chimney off, it also broke a bunch of windows in our neighborhood. But the airline or the airport or somebody, I was young at the time, came in and paid for all the fixing.
Fix it, yeah. So, well, then,
you know, we were like, okay,
fine. Yeah, so the Mars rocket launch in Geneseo is at the National Warplane Museum, Geneseo Airport. And so you can go to the museum, see all the planes. We really try not to hit the planes on the way down.
That's a good idea.
We had an X-15 wrap its parachute lines around C-130. But now none, there's a plane circling and we can't launch. Well, there's a plane circling. And we know he's up there circling, waiting for it to launch. And we're screaming at the sky, we can't launch until you get out of here.
Yeah. All right, listen, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is done, but do not despair. Do not despair. We will. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. Yes, a whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve. Okay, maybe you should despair. And a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. We're going to present a few of our sponsors and then our underwriters. But then we'll be right back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. While I read some news, attackers are abusing Google Ads and legitimate Claude AI shared chats in an active malvertising campaign. Users searching for Claude Mac download, for all those people who bought Mac Minis, may come across sponsored search results that list Claude.ai as the target website, but lead to instructions that install malware on their Mac. The search turns up a Claude AI shared chat that presents itself as an official Claude Code on Mac installation guide attributed to Apple support. The chat walks users through opening terminal, ding, 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 there's a red flag, and pasting a command which silently downloads and runs malware on their Mac. There's also a second shared Claude chat carrying out the same attack through entirely separate infrastructure. The two chats follow an identical structure and social engineering approach, but use different domains and payloads, so be very careful trying to download Claude code to that Mac Mini you finally got your hands on.
And run the latest Mac updates. Apple has added protection for pasting in the terminal. Are you sure you want to do that?
Yep. Well, but and people will just say yes.
Yeah.
So that's not really much protection. Their protection is your brain, and most people aren't using them. Speaking of Apple and AI, Apple's two-year partnership with OpenAI has become strained, with the OpenAI failing to see the expected benefits from the deal that they made and now preparing for a potential legal action. OpenAI lawyers are working with an outside legal firm on several options that could be formally executed in the near future. Apparently, OpenAI believed that the two companies' collaboration, which wove ChatGPT into Apple software, may result in more users subscribing to the chatbot. The company also anticipated deeper integration across more products. Shockingly, none of that happened, and OpenAI is a bit miffed. Not entirely sure how that's actually Apple's fault, but all bets are off once the lawyers get involved. Intel is set to produce semiconductors for Apple shoring up its manufacturing business in the U.S. Following a year of intensive talks, the companies have reached a preliminary agreement for Intel to produce processors for Apple devices. It reunites the two firms years after Apple moved away from Intel chips for Mac computers. The deal also marks a significant win for Intel's contract manufacturing business, which will benefit from a steady stream of demand from one of the world's largest consumer electronics companies. While it's unclear which Apple products Intel would make chips for, the deal could help Apple diversify its manufacturing base as it seeks more chip capacity. Apple currently relies heavily on TSMC, which is often bottlenecked by orders from Gen AI chip makers such as NVIDIA and AMD. Google I.O. is this coming Tuesday and Wednesday, and Google has teased their next product, the successor to the Chromebook. In a fit of branding creativity, it's to be called the Google Book. Somebody certainly earned their paycheck on that one. Information is thin on the ground at this point, but we should learn more later this week. What we do know is that this will be a massively all-in-one, that it'll be massively all-in on AI, of course, and that it will seamlessly hook up to your Android phone to allow you to run your phone's apps on the Google Book. I don't know who's been screaming for that, but now they've got it. And you don't have to scream for us. Just call 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. It'll be interesting to see what the Mac, the Google Book ends up looking like. And we know what it's going to look like physically. You can go to googlebook.com and see that. But what it looks like when you're playing with it, when you're actually using it, it'll be interesting to see.
Designed for Gemini intelligence, optimized for Android ecosystem.
Right.
Taglines, yeah. Right. But the back to the chip manufacturer for a second. One of the things a lot of people often don't realize is there's lots of other chips inside stuff besides the CPU or the SoC.
Right.
And so Intel could be working on some of those, too. Remember a few years ago, a bunch of cars couldn't be completed because they were missing some chips.
Yep.
You know, like the heat seater chip or something. So the stadium in Detroit was parking lot was full of brand new cars waiting for chips to come in
that they couldn't sell because they couldn't heat the seats.
Couldn't get this last chip to put back in.
I don't know why you just didn't say we'll sell you this car and give you the chip free later.
Add it later, yeah.
But okay, I guess. But yeah, so. This whole Google Book thing. One of the things that they're trying to do, they want a successor to the Chromebook. Chromebooks are incredibly popular, in part because of their cost and because of the market that they're in, which is education, which doesn't need, you know, they don't want machines that play games. They want machines that let students do research and write.
Do work.
Right. So that's good, and that's important, and that's excellent.
Plus, they have the management infrastructure and the courseware infrastructure and the productivity app infrastructure. So, might as well do a computer too.
Well, exactly right. So now, with this Google Book, they're looking, I think, closer to the Neo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a higher end. We don't know anything about the pricing. We don't know anything about what chip it's running. We don't know anything. But it looks to be a higher-end product. It looks to be more like the Macintosh cases, that single-block aluminum case nonsense, yeah. And all of that. So we'll see what it actually ends up looking like. But, the idea is they are trying to integrate the Android ecosystem and the Chrome OS ecosystem. As to what they're going to call that ecosystem, whether they're going to call it Chrome OS or some other name, we really don't know yet.
Chrome Droid,
or yeah, who knows what it's all going to be. But the idea is that it will be running, you'll be able to run your phone apps, and it looks like you run them through your phone. It actually connects to your phone to do the running of the app, and the screen just goes to your Google Book, just like happens on the Mac now.
Doesn't Chrome already run Android apps?
Chrome runs Android apps, but not all of them, because not all of them have been, and it runs them kind of funny sometimes.
So screen sharing, basically, to your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're basically screen sharing to the Chrome. And that'll happen only on the newer Android phones at first, certainly, if at all. But that's what they're looking at. And the reality is that what we're seeing is an attempt for Google to integrate their ecosystem. One of the real strengths of Apple is that across their product lines, all of their systems integrate with each other quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't true for Google at this point, and they want it to be. So that's what that's all about.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern when the rumors first started coming out about a low-cost MacBook. Initially, it was being called a Chromebook killer, but that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
But so the MacBook Neo, even though it's running a technically iPhone processor, the whole M series was based on the iPhone processors to begin with, it runs everything a Mac runs. It is a Mac.
Right.
It doesn't not run some. It might run it slower. Yeah, you can run Final Cut on it. You probably won't want to, but you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's and part it, of the problem
and that's
that
not
we're
the
seeing
target market for it.
Is that people don't understand what it is they're buying.
Well, and so many people buy on price alone.
Right.
They walk into a store, I want a $500 computer. To do what? Oh, I'm doing 3D modeling and research engineering. No!
Not on a $500 computer, you're not.
Yeah, add a zero.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And like you said earlier, all I want to do is a little word processing and surf the web. Oh, and play Half-Life and Warhammer. No!
Mm-hmm. Or they get it and then they complain because it won't do this or that.
Yeah. Right.
And they never, well, you failed. You didn't tell us you wanted to do that. Well, I just thought it could.
Yeah. Well, Ken, you won't like it.
Yeah. Right. You can do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're not going to get very far because everyone's going to be shooting you because
you're going to be dead.
They can move faster.
Right. Yeah, moving around.
Right. The latency, the lag is huge, but you can do it. All right, so let's go to the phones. We'll talk to Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, Nick. How's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, we're doing okay. Last few days, my wife's phone, Samsung Android, has been acting kind of strange. It keeps coming up, and a program that claims it's a PDF reader says that she's out of date and needs to click this link and install an update. I've looked through the whole phone, and there is no PDF reader in the phone. And the app that it's saying it is isn't there, and it didn't have Adobe either. So I installed the Adobe, and that still doesn't pop up as much, but every once in a while it will. And then this morning it started saying Samsung was shutting down her account because she wasn't following their security protocols and install this software and so forth and so on.
No, that's all spam.
It sounds like it's a malicious web extension or a web notification. So it's not really an app. It's a notification on the website.
And it's essentially an ad that somebody took out, and that's what it is. It pops up.
So you have to find where your web notification settings are and either deny that website or deny all notifications. Here we go.
Which would probably make her happy because she hates notifications.
Yeah, turn them all off. And that's probably your best bet. Most people don't like them, and most people don't use most of them anyway. So, the fact that you get spam through them means turning them off is better.
Okay, Malware Bytes for phones. It's an Android phone. Hang on a second. I'll get my brain to work here.
Sure.
I should go to the Malware Bytes site and download it? Rather than the Play Store?
Well, that will probably take you to the right one on the Play Store. One of the problems both Apple and Android have is either not fake apps or low quality apps with very similar names trying to trick you into the real app.
Okay. Because
but Malware Bytes wouldn't necessarily. Pardon?
I've been reading through this the last couple of days, and it says if you bought it through the Play Store, you can't manage it through the Malwarebytes site so you can't combine it and get a package deal for your iterations, because I've got it on my phone, I want to put it on hers, and it's time I put it on her MacBook Air. So I want to get a package deal from them, which they'll give me.
Yeah, you buy it directly from them for that.
Yeah, it's got to be bought directly for that.
Right, and that's at malwarebytes.com, also Bytes with a Y, right, yeah, as a matter of fact.
But Malwarebytes wouldn't necessarily stop this problem, because it's not malware on the device. It's a notification from an ad, from a website. So you have to turn off the notification to stop that.
Right.
I get those all the time. I read a lot of news blogs, and it always says, "Do you want to get notified of new entries?" No. So every time I get on a new computer, I got to turn off notification settings, which I'm posting a link on how to do it on Android also.
Okay, I'll make a point of looking at that. It just, I haven't put it on her phone, and it probably should have Malwarebytes on it anyway. And I know I should put it on her Mac, and it does work on Mac.
Yeah, but you can get both through Malwarebytes.com.
Yeah,
and that's the legit website.
Make sure it's not sponsored. Go to the one that actually says Malwarebytes.com.
Just go to Malwarebytes.com. Don't even search for it. Just go to it.
Okay. All right, that works.
Yep.
Yeah, because it won't let me add anything to my current license until it's installed on the ones I want to add it to. So it's
right. Okie doke.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Yes, you will. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Oh, and I should mention that tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Will be the Soundbites Lounge. You can go to soundbites.org /lounge, and you will see a link there for the lounge. It's essentially a video chat, and we all get together and do this for an hour online. We didn't do it last week, but we will do it this week. So you can either go to our website at soundbites.org, and that's Bytes with a Y, and see it as the first of the important links on the website, the Soundbites Lounge. And it's most Sundays from 9 to 10. It wasn't last week, but it will be this week. So join us there, and we will be there from 9 to 10.
Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Next to Raleigh. Poor Durham has a identity complex. Everyone knows Raleigh. Nobody knows Durham.
Right. Sorry, I'm typing. Malwarebytes for Android. You can fix that.
Yeah, well.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Alan from Durham, North Carolina. How are things down there?
Well, the sun is shining, the birds are singing. I guess it's okay.
All right. What's up?
You know, you can go a long time without knowing something that everybody else knows.
Today I learned. Spectrum. Yep.
I've been on Spectrum forever. I've had a computer since 286. Spectrum came with Roadrunner. I had Thunderbird. Everything was flowers and candy and beautiful. Now, I'm getting out of Spectrum because they're charging me too much. And some nice guy came to the door and sold me a T-Mobile website contact, web connection thing. And I'm finding out that it doesn't come with email.
Yeah,
right.
I'm finding out that I've got to get something called a provider. Now, what's up with that?
In the beginning, your internet provider gave you email because that was the only way to get email. In the last probably 10 years or so, there are hundreds of other email companies have popped up, so many of the providers don't give you email anymore because they don't want to have to store it. They don't want to have to handle it. They don't want to have to back it up for you.
It's easier for them if they don't.
It's much easier for them, yeah. So Apple, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo are probably the three big...
Proton.
Four biggest ones. Proton touts their security, but they just turned over a bunch of information because they had a subpoena.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can be secure...
Until it isn't,
yeah.
But yeah, the we've been telling people for the longest time, because it is likely that, you know, if you move or circumstances change, you'll want to change your internet service provider that you should not use the email from your internet service provider.
Because for a long time, they were regional. You know, if you move two or three states away, your internet provider doesn't exist down there.
Sometimes if you move to the other side of town.
Yeah.
So getting a permanent address at some place like Google or Microsoft or, you know, Yahoo or one of those is definitely safer and better than using your internet service provider's email.
Personally, I stay away from Yahoo because they're not very good at spam filtering.
No, they're not. Google is the best.
Google is the best. Yeah, and I'm an Apple guy, so we don't like Hotmail either.
Right.
No. If I just don't want to use evil Google, what do I use?
You can use Hotmail. You can use Yahoo. You can use Apple Mail.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an Apple user to use Apple Mail. You can use Proton. You can use Duck.com. You can use
there's hundreds of mail companies.
Yeah. There's probably see if there's a list of email providers you can post.
Yeah.
Steve's going to look for a list of email providers that he can post. And each of them has their pros and cons, right? So, for example, right now Google gives you 15 gigabytes of data storage. So if you're the sort of person who gets a lot of email, particularly if that email has a lot of attachments, then Google is better for you than, say, Microsoft or any of the others because you get 15 gig as opposed to, say, 5 gig.
And that's one of the big things to look at when you're looking at email providers, how much storage space do they give you?
Right.
To store your mail. Generally, text mail is very small, right. But if, as Nick said, someone sends you pictures or video, that can take up a lot more space.
I have a friend
It's never come up as a problem, so I guess I don't have to worry about it that much.
Well, right. Particularly if you don't get a lot of pay. I have a friend who sends me cartoons all the time, and it's great, but if I didn't have the storage that I have, mm-hmm. I would have gone way past my 5 gig limit by now. So yeah, I would, and I delete a lot of them after I read them, but still. Steve's gonna find a list.
135.
Well, you gotta find one you like.
Yeah.
You're gonna do some research as
their top pick is Gmail.
Yeah, their top pick, and it's everybody's top pick for three main reasons. Nobody expects Spanish Inquisition. First is the fact that their spam filters are exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
Second is that you get more storage than most other places give you. And third, I personally know people at Google who have explained to me how often and how well and how redundant their backups are. So the likelihood that they would lose your email is vanishingly small. That's what I like about Google. I agree with you about a lot of things about Google, but those are overriding concerns for me, the storage and the safety and et cetera, et cetera.
Google says they stop over 2 billion spam messages a day.
Yeah.
I still get 20 or 30 a day. Imagine if they didn't stop 2 billion a day.
Well, I have multiple email accounts, and the ones that I have that are not through Google are just plastered all day long with spam.
Yep.
Well, like we've said before, though, this is a game of leapfrog.
Yep.
And the minute you block one person, they find a way to create another account to send you more messages.
Yep.
I mean, it's an ongoing thing, but they do a darn good job of filtering out a heck of a lot of it.
Okay, well, sometimes we do something that we don't want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I understand that, but
that's the way life goes.
You're going to have a whole lot of homework now. Steve's posted a list of every email provider in 2026. So you should find at least one in there that makes you happy.
Needs. Yep.
Well, as long as I don't have to look at the ads and stuff like that, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Well,
don't
use the webmail. Use an email client, then you don't get any of the ads.
Right. And one thing, while we're talking about that, if you use something like Thunderbird, for example, to get your email, one of the things you can say,
he loves it.
Oh yeah, I love Thunderbird too. One of the things you can do is set it to only show text mail, and you'll never see an ad because the ads are all HTML, are all web code. And if you're only showing text, you might see that web code and it looks ugly, but you won't see the ads and you won't get infected with anything. But the email now looks ugly. It doesn't, you know, there aren't fonts and colors and pictures and formatting and all that stuff. Anyway, Ellen, your job now is to get everyone in Durham, North Carolina listening to our show.
Gotcha.
Okay, you're on it.
All right.
Thanks, Ellen.
Have a good day.
Let us know what you pick and why.
Okay.
Thanks.
One of the problems in changing your email address is telling everyone your new address.
Right.
Not just your friends, any online account you set up.
Well, that's one of the reasons we suggest that what people do is if you are currently with an internet service provider email.
Sound at your name.
Get an off provider address, Gmail, I don't care where. Get that address, and then in your current address, set an automatic reply that says, first, forward all your email to the new thing, and then secondly, set an automatic reply that says, I have a new email address from now on, please use whatever the new email address is.
And you can get your own name, you know, like you've got, you know, asknick.com and nickf.com.
Right.
That's the
nickfrancesco.com.
Yeah, that's the best way. That way no one can ever take your email address away from you because you've got your own name.
Right. Yeah, I have asknick@gmail.com. I also have nick@asknick.com. I can have anybody I want at asknick.com because I run it.
Yep.
You'll find that there are lots of alternatives. And having your own a domain is not terribly expensive, and there are places that will do it fairly cheap.
We use one called Namecheap, which is $9 a year.
Exactly. It's not that expensive. So you can have your name.
That's not for email. That's for your name.
Right. And then you have to find somewhere that lets you use that as your email address. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, which is Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have James from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, James. What's up?
Oh, hello, Nick. Yeah, you guys answered a lot of my questions that I had about the Yahoo email, which is terrible. I'm looking to get rid of it. And you recommended, which I'm probably going to do, is the Google email. Because just the other day, not only all the spam that I get, I had one of those big blaring messages pop up that my computer was now infected through Yahoo Mail, and I've learned from the past that obviously don't click anything, and I just push the power button and shut it down for 15 minutes, and I restarted it, and that, whatever, that somebody trying to get in there went away. The transfer from the Yahoo Mail to the Gmail, does that automatically go to all the people, or do I have to contact them?
Yeah, you have to contact everyone about your new address. As Nick said earlier, you can, like, put it in your signature line, this is my new address. You can do a mass mailing to everyone in your address book. But if you could do that, put it in the BCC field, blind carbon copy,
right,
so you're not sending all those addresses out in the clear.
So most systems let you set up an auto reply.
Okay.
And in what you should do in the auto reply is say, thank you for your email. I have a new address, please use it from now on, and here it is. And you can also then forward all your mail from Yahoo to Gmail.
Not necessarily. I think that's part of Yahoo Plus that you have to pay for.
Oh.
How much do they charge?
$20 a year, was it?
Oh, that's well worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So Yahoo also just lowered their mail storage quota. It used to be a terabyte. They lowered it to 20 gigabytes.
Yeah, their email is absolutely terrible. I don't like it at all. That's why I'm glad I just heard that last phone call.
And if you use the website to look at the email, it's just so full of ads.
Oh, it's terrible. And I've had it for a long time, like 10 years. And every year they just get worse and worse. And
yeah.
I've had terrible problems. I'm going to go to the Gmail and work on that over the next couple weeks.
Good. Also, Gmail has an import tool from their website, you know, from gmail.com. There's an import tool where you can import all of your Yahoo mail.
Okay.
So you don't lose it. You move it over to Gmail.
Import tool. Okay, I'll work on that. Thank you for that great information.
All right, have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the Yahoo plan with auto forwarding is $5 a month.
$5 a month.
Which isn't too bad.
Right. But if you're...
So you might want to pay for it for a month or two to get all of your friends your new address. See, the problem is you tell them your new address, they never change their address book.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They'll just reply to the previous one.
Right. So those of you who are on... your internet service provider's email. I'm not saying it's bad, because it isn't. But you will find that your life runs smoother if you aren't on your internet service provider's email. And most of them don't want to provide email anymore anyway.
One of the things we saw is when Frontier got out of the email business, they sold their email to Yahoo. So you can still use your Frontier email address, but you have to change all your server settings to go to Yahoo.
Right.
And I've read many other ISPs around the country have done that. I think it was Cox and Cablevision both did that. So yeah, Yahoo got more mail. The one big criticism I had with Yahoo is they lost their entire user database, over 3 billion users. What was his name? Alex Stamos, the chief of security at Yahoo, said, "What's that box over there in the corner?"
Yeah.
And the people said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It turns out that it was a tap on their email.
Yeah. All right. We're going to talk to Dwayne from Rochester, New York. That's what we're going to do. Hi, Dwayne. What's up?
Okay. Well, while we're on the subject of Gmail, I want to let you know news that I saw this week. The 15 gigabyte storage is not going to be guaranteed. So the news is that some people signing up for Gmail notice that they're getting a screen now that says your account comes with 5 gigabytes storage, and if you want to share your phone number with us, we will give you 15.
Yep.
So it looks like Google has kind of gotten conscious that people are signing up for multiple accounts so that they can keep on getting multiple 15 gig blocks.
Yeah, there are even we talked about that at the top of the show. There are also programs you can run that aggregate all your Gmail accounts, all your online accounts. So, for example, if you've got 3 Gmail accounts, you can make it look like a single 45 gig drive.
They actually had someone read the terms and conditions, and where it used to say your account comes with 15 gig, it now says it comes with up to 15 gig.
Yep, exactly right.
So
and you really want to buy more.
Yeah.
right. Yeah. And of course, everybody will sell you more.
Yeah.
It looks like they're rolling this out, you know, over a period of time, probably.
Right now, it seems like they are testing it in India, Africa, and a little bit maybe in India. But, you know, obviously what they really want to do is roll it out to everybody. So they're testing it now, and they're going to roll it out to everybody later.
Yeah. Nick, I have a pCloud question to ask you.
Sure.
So if you have pCloud, and it is backing up your personal computer. And let's say you have a project, and the folder is called Project 2025. And you note to pCloud to back that up. And then 2026 happens, and you say, well, Project 2025 is complete. I'm going to remove that folder, and I'm going to archive it onto a whatever. And so you remove that from your PC. What does pCloud do, given that that folder that it's been told to back up no longer exists?
pCloud is a syncing service. So what you do on your home, on your machine, is mirrored in the cloud. So if you delete the folder on your computer, it is also deleted in the cloud.
But they keep a version history for 30 days, is it?
30 days. So you could go back and get it again, but only for 30 days. So pCloud will... So, for example,
That's a big difference between sync and backup. A lot of people misunderstand
the difference. Right, right. pCloud is a belt and suspenders thing. Right? So if your machine dies, pCloud is your savior. If you accidentally delete something, pCloud is not your savior.
And then don't notice for a month or two.
And don't notice for a month.
It's 15 days for free or 30 days if you have a paid version of pCloud.
Right. So, for example, if your machine dies, your data are still on pCloud. You can, you restore your machine, you hook back up to pCloud, it pulls it all back
down
again.
Takes forever. We had a customer with a competing cloud storage. It took a week to download 400 gigs.
Yeah. Well, it depends on two things, the speed of your service, and actually, pCloud is pretty fast, but it depends on the speed of your service and the speed of your internet connection and the speed of your computer.
It felt like they were artificially constraining
Probably were.
Yeah.
Yeah. No big surprise if they were artificially constraining it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no need then for me to go on and say, hey, pCloud, that folder is gone, so you should drop your own copy.
Right. Yeah. In fact, wait a couple of days, and then you should be able to open pCloud from your desktop, right, or from the web.
Yeah. Right.
And you'll see that it's gone.
Yeah.
And now, I would wait a day. Just wait a day. But yes.
And that's why you want to have a second, a backup solution, a second hard drive or a backup solution. So, say you delete that file, and then in a month you realize you needed something back.
Yeah.
Then you go to your backup and get it back from the previous.
Right. You're not leaving all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, great. That's what I need to know. Thanks.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye.
We say the odds of your computer dying are low, but not zero. In fact, the odds of your computer dying eventually are 100%.
100%. And the odds of your hard drive dying are 20% a year.
Yep.
So
if you get a second hard drive, the odds of losing data go down, but still not zero.
Still not zero.
Get a third hard drive, it goes just down a little more, but still not zero.
Never zero.
Never zero.
So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 backups, plus 2 different cloud backups, and I played with a third. I might do that. But, I was a systems administrator, so... I put the dash in anal retentive.
You know how many times we've heard my wife is going to kill me if I lose the baby photos?
Well, right.
Yeah.
Or my wife's going to kill me, I lost the baby photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's worse.
Yeah.
And before we go back to the phones, let me remind you that in speaking of photos, if you are an Amazon Prime customer, you currently have free unlimited photo storage available to you. It is part of the package. Why are you not using it? You can put the Amazon Photo app on your phone, and it works just like the Google Photos app. You take a picture, it gets backed up to Amazon Photos. In fact, you can have both on your phone simultaneously. I do.
Although they only give you 5 gigabytes of video storage. So if you shot a video with your phone, that's not a picture anymore, it's a video.
Right.
So that'll count toward the storage, or you don't store the video. You have to manually delete the videos.
Right, you go back and manually.
Or you buy more storage.
Which is what they want.
That's the default on every company.
Exactly.
Just buy more storage.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, on the subject of backing up, I have pCloud. I have the desktop app for pCloud. I don't have a lot that I need to save that's more current. Most of the stuff that I'm saving is old stuff, and that's already on two different accounts and a 5 terabyte spinning external drive.
Nice.
I have was playing around with the app on the desktop, seeing if I could automate the process of anything that changes. The pCloud has the sync in the menu, has the sync, and it has the backup
right
option. So we've already talked about the differences between those two, but what I was reading the fine print of the backup, it said if you delete it on your backup, it will automatically delete off of your device. If you delete it off of your device, it will automatically delete off of your backup. I thought the whole point of the backup was so that I could potentially delete it off of my device and keep it up in the cloud.
Well, yes. Okay, so... All right, so the problem is English. What they're actually describing is sync, and backup is in fact different. Most people sync. They don't back up.
Right.
So if you do delete something from your main machine, it gets deleted on all of your, quote, backups, which are really syncs.
Right. Because it only keeps one copy. Right.
Right.
But it
does have a separate place to click for sync and a separate place to click for backup. And it has a slightly different looking notification when you click on that button that essentially says the same thing. It just says it a little differently. So that's where I was like, okay, the other option is I can upload to pCloud without using that desktop app. I can do it on the web interface, which I've been doing regularly anyway. So tax information, medical information, all those other things that I want to keep a actual backup in the event that I need to go find it again and my computer died.
If your computer died, everything you have on pCloud will come back. But it only keeps one version. You should. This is another issue with backups. If you back up a file, never delete the original because now there's no backup.
Right.
You never want to have one copy of your files.
That's I understand. That's why I have it on the external, and it's on the Gmail. It's on the pCloud. It's everywhere. But what I was concerned about was the message on the desktop app that said the backup was essentially behaving just like the sync and not a backup.
Right. Yeah, and again, that's English. If you look at their definition of backup, it actually says all changes you make are synced in real time. If you delete a file from your backup, it will be deleted from your devices.
I see quite a few places where it says sync / backup. They're saying that's the same thing.
That's the same thing.
Well,
they don't do what you think of as backup. They do what you think of as sync.
It sort of is because there's one backup copy.
Right. There is a backup copy unless you delete it.
Right.
They have two separate buttons on the desktop app. I think more than two, but the two that say sync and backup are totally separate.
I do understand that, but what I'm telling you is when you look at what the two of them do, they do the same thing.
Okay. That's kind of, how do I say, stupid?
You can. Feel free.
To put the same thing twice on a desktop app?
Yeah.
Redundant. You think you're doing something different, but it's the same damn thing. It's like, why bother? Why waste the real estate, why any of that?
Because backup is a more well-known word than sync.
It still doesn't make any
sense
to my brain. It's
No, I don't disagree with you at all.
They're using backup as a noun, not a verb.
Right.
When you sync something, there is a backup.
Yeah, I just my whole thing is why is it two different buttons on the page that say do the same thing?
I agree with you. I just don't have an answer for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to bring that up so people will see that and don't read the fine print. They'll be deluded in believing that they have a backup when they don't.
Right.
Yep.
They also have a different service called pCloud Drive that only stores your files on the cloud, not a local copy. So that's that may be what you want if you're trying to save space on your local drive, but then there's still only one copy of your files, and that needs to be backed up.
Right.
Well, I have a 12 terabyte account with pCloud. It takes a little bit of effort to upload files as I create them. Tax season being one of them that we just passed. I uploaded all of my tax records to both Google and the pCloud, but I did that manually. I've been looking at some of the automated systems and having a little bit of difficulty getting those to work on both a Linux machine and a Microsoft machine. Although as each day goes by, there's much and much less on the Microsoft machine. I've been doing it manually. I thought, oh, geez, an automatic thing, and then I looked on their app and it says automatically, but it's not what I want, so I don't know what to do with it.
Now, here's an interesting distinction. Backup runs at a specific time. Sync runs all the time.
Oh, interesting.
Real time.
Okay.
But again, why bother with the difference if sync is running real time?
Well, I use pCloud, which syncs all of my files to the web, but I also back them up to other devices at 2 o'clock every morning.
Mm-hmm. Two different things.
Two different things.
What's your best, easiest for a person of my low level of computer expertise? What's the best service for doing an automated backup to multiple places?
Which operating system?
Yeah.
Linux primarily.
I use rsync or rclone. But rsync, rclone is mostly rsync for cloud storage. What rsync is, that's a command line thing. Is there a GUI for rsync? I don't use it. Yes. Oh, grsync grsync, rsync UI, acrosync, that's for Windows and Mac. So here's the deal. What I use is a program called rsync, and what it does is it at 2 o'clock every morning, it goes out and grabs all the new files or all the changes to old files and uploads them to wherever I tell it. And in my case, I tell it like three different places.
Okay.
Those are true backups because they don't sync. They just back up. And if I have 16 copies of something, then I have 16 copies of something.
Okay.
There is a front end for that called grsync. Grsync.
Okay.
And it's available in almost all repositories. There's also a Mac and a Windows version of that. And so you then set it up graphically and say, at 2 o'clock every morning, mm-hmm, I want you to take these three folders and back them up here.
Okay.
So that's probably the simplest one.
Okay, rsync.
Yeah, rsync is the command line version. Grsync graphical rsync is the graphical version, which is honestly infinitely easier to use.
Okay.
I learned rsync first, but I don't recommend it for everybody.
Right. Yeah, I can do some command line stuff, and I'm learning more of it as I go, but right now I need an immediate.
Yeah, yeah, grsync. It should be in your repository.
Yeah, I've been having trouble with the Ubuntu repository, just sitting there spinning its wheels. So that's another discussion, but we've already covered some of that before, that there is a problem.
Yeah, we have. There have been issues, but keep on it.
Okay. Super. Thank you so much for your help.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too. Good timing, because that music tells us we are done. For what is this? 2 hours flew this week. I have to say that. We didn't get through all the news. I want to thank everybody who called in. These were excellent sets of questions this week. Some good problems, some good questions. Particularly that one from the guy who was having issues getting a phone call in the middle of his show. But I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. Don't forget, join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in the Soundbites Lounge. Head on over to soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down to some important links, and the very first one is the Soundbites Lounge, and we'll see you then. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?